Hello and welcome to Everyday Oral Surgery. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stuckey. I am an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Denver, Colorado. The goal of this podcast is to connect, learn, and inspire. In this podcast, you'll be hearing from OMS surgeons all over the globe discussing ways to improve the practice of oral and maxillofacial surgery. Most information shared in this podcast will be based on personal experience and opinions, so please supplement what you learn here with approved research studies. If you are a regular follower of the podcast, please go to our website, everydayoralsurgery.com, and register to receive newsletters and find links to our social media accounts. Most importantly, if you would like to be interviewed on the podcast or know someone who you'd like to hear from, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear about, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com. Without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode. Today I'm with Dr. Benjamin Heckler. He's an oral maxillofacial surgeon practicing in North Carolina. Ben, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast.
Hey, Grant. Happy to be here as always.
I had a lot of great feedback lately. I think we've been doing some good topics, pathology, anesthesia. We've been doing a lot of different things with various people. And I'm excited for today's topic. Real quick, you know, I was going back and listening to some of our older episodes that you and I did, that others did. And man, the podcast has definitely evolved over time. And I want to thank our listeners for hanging in there, those that have, because there was many episodes where like the audio was bad, just my equipment was bad. Some of the topics were kind of lame, stuff like that. And I feel like we've refined it over time, but it's taken some patience from the listeners and their ability to kind of, you know, sift through the weeds and pull out the gems and kind of not get caught up in how this isn't the most, you know, Joe Rogan-esque, ultra-supported podcast. It's just basically me and you and a couple microphones and maybe our basement or something. Nothing fancy. But, you know, we're trying to get people learning, trying to get content out there. And so I guess take that as you will.
You're getting there. You're getting there, Grant. You're almost Joe Rogan status.
Yes, let's go. Well, on that note of Joe Rogan and humor, because he's always cracking funny comments, today we want to talk about finding humor in oral and maxillofacial surgery. Okay, and this, I love humor. I love stand-up comedy. I love laughing. But this isn't a kind of hand-in-hand topic, right? It's not like humor easily is found, I don't think, or at least it's not readily looked upon. I think we've all had the experience of going through residency, you know, taking out difficult teeth, being in very difficult, tense situations. And we're definitely not, I think most of us aren't trained seeing a director or chairman laughing a lot. You know, our attendings are very serious people. And I have many philosophies about this. One is, I think our attendings, they're trying to control what the residents and, you know, their lowers do and think by being very serious and like hard on them, because they're so new and they're learning things that they want everyone to take the gravity of how important this is. And if they were to maybe make light of things or laugh, maybe they would be worried it could be misconstrued by the student that this isn't a serious topic, or this isn't a, you know, can't have serious outcomes, but you know, we know it can. And so I personally think humor is very important to relieve our stress, to kind of pull out the funny things that happen, but also, you know, note that we're laughing at the situation. We're not laughing at the surgeon. We're not laughing at the patient. It's more of just all the, you know, funny situational things that can come from a stressful situation. Any comments about that aspect?
Oh, I agree completely, Grant. I think there's this perception as a attending, and probably as a, depending upon where you are in residency too, that you have to maintain, as you described, this this seriousness. At the same time, what I think you're getting into here is, if you speak to any psychiatrist or psychologist, you know, one of the appropriate stress responses in psychology is finding humor in difficult situations. And so there is absolutely an appropriate place for that. And it's sometimes difficult for us to appreciate that or find that and enjoy it because the stressful and serious situations that we're in.
And we've talked a little bit about this on other podcasts as far as ways to relieve stress, because we live such stressful lifestyles. We're in stressful careers. A lot of us have other businesses and big families and other things going on, and we're pulled in many directions. So it is very important to deal with that. We talked about meditation on one podcast, super important. I think balancing your schedules and not getting too crazy with work and balancing your life is important. But this topic is near and dear to my heart. So humor in oral surgery, you know, can it be found? Will we find it today? Maybe a part, maybe a little part of it. So I wanted to start off by talking about Dude Perfect. I don't know if you watch Dude Perfect, but I'm a big fan. My kids watch it. I think most people who have like preteens and teenagers are watching Dude Perfect, but they do these stereotypes, right? Where it's like, you know, beach stereotypes or basketball or Thanksgiving, where they do stereotypes. I think a lot of this came initially, honestly, from Seinfeld. I love Seinfeld, and he was like the OG stereotyper with all of the women he had on every episode, you know, like man hands and or the soup Nazi, like all he had these names for all these people that were pretty funny. So I had some stereotypes for surgeons, for patients, assistants, different things like that. And before I do this, you know, and say my stereotypes that I came up with, I am saying this not like saying that, oh, there's this one person I'm thinking of and one guy is just like this. I think stereotypes are generally, what's the word? I'm tripping over my words here, but it's basically a way to say, hey, here is part of us that's like this. Here's part of us that's like that. And yeah, maybe you will find a surgeon who's more like this or more like that. I think it's kind of actually good for us to look at some of these stereotypes and then in the end ask our question, who am I like and what stereotypes am I, you know, and maybe I need to reevaluate how I am. So, and some of these stereotypes for surgeons came about because I was talking with a friend of mine who's a general dentist the other day, and I was like, hey man, like, what kind of surgeons have you dealt with in the past? And he was telling me all these different types of surgeons. And I said, have you noticed any similarities in these groups of surgeons? Because they started clumping together in these groups. And we started getting a good laugh out of it because there was like three main groups of surgeons that general dentists deal with. And the first one, which is probably the best well-known, is the God complex. You know, I think a lot of dentists, orthodontists, pediatrics, they see the surgeon as having this God complex that, you know, we went to more schooling, we got into this oral surgery because we're smarter, you know, just everything we do is just more superior. And so you get these surgeons that almost fulfill this situation. And so the God complex surgeon, you know, thinks he's smarter or she's smarter than everyone else. They see everyone as kind of not up to snuff, and it's their job for the day. Their goal for the day is to prove as many people wrong and show these people why, you know, they're the surgeon themselves and this person they're talking to is not the surgeon. So you get all these funny scenarios building up with the God complex, but they're always shaking their head. They're always sighing, you know, because they're just frustrated with all the ridiculous, stupid people in the world, you know. Their least favorite thing to do is just listen to a general dentist yammer on about what they think they know. They don't know. Have you experienced this at all? Or maybe you know a God complex surgeon in another surgery field.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you were talking about the stereotypes before you started to present them, you say that, you know, we tend to see parts of ourselves in the stereotypes. And I can imagine as we talk about these, I think we will all probably be able to identify a little bit with each one of the stereotypes. But yeah, I mean, the God complex, I feel like many of us at least like subconsciously recognize this, even if we don't personify this. I mean, like, you know, many times either us or certain surgeons we know, they feel like they're the epitome of medical and dental excellence, right? It's like they have made it to the top, and there's a reason they have made it to the top. And because of that, there is just this exudance of pride that is really, frankly, sometimes demeaning. And it's just to the point that, well, just look at my record and you can know why you should be listening to me right now. You know, we come across this all the time.
All the time. Yeah, exactly like you're saying. There's probably part of this in me and I've acted like this and probably offended some people. But the God complex surgeon is annoying for everyone to deal with, right? We know that. The next surgeon is much more palatable to dentists, but this surgeon is who I call the bro. They're the surgeon who is just super positive. Usually they're right out of school. You know, they have the mindset that I am just so happy to be doing oral surgery. I'm blessed to be an oral surgeon. I'm pumped to be taking out teeth. I'm just happy to get out there, pound the pavement, start schmoozing dentists and getting to be best buddies with everybody. They'll show up at the general dentist's office and, you know, they're your best buddy. They're telling you, oh man, whatever you need, I'm here for you. And send your patient any time of day, any hour. I got your back, bro. Even if I'm in church on Sunday, man, I'm cutting out of there to take that tooth out. It's like this type of guy or girl is just, they make me smile, you know, and it's just so funny because I know some bros and it's hilarious. Their goal is to, you know, make as many friends as they can, because at the end of the day, I don't want to be crass, but the bro has a huge amount of student loans, right? And they're trying to they're trying to pay their debt off. And so their number one goal is to collect dentists as referral sources. And they'll do anything they have to do to get their loans paid off. I don't know. What is your experience? Have you ran into the bro?
Oh, yeah. Run into the bro all the time. And let me tell you, I mean, I think another spinoff stereotype for the bro that at least comes to my mind, and maybe this is me taking the bro stereotype a different way. But, you know, there's the surgeon, or, you know, this comes in all professions too, right? Whatever we're talking about, there's the bro that's like, oh, yeah, man, I got it. Just let, no problem. And then the moment you reach out to that bro, the bro is nowhere to be found sometimes, right? That's the spinoff stereotype. Which is like, well, wait a second. Hold on now, bro. Where's the fulfillment of all these promises? And so I think that's another stereotype. That's a spinoff of that. And that stereotype will particularly anger the God complex stereotype, right? So it's interesting, the interplay of these different pieces of us that we have, all the different stereotypes that fit into our personalities.
All right, next one is the grump. This is the grumpy old surgeon who's been taking out teeth for, you know, 30 plus years. They basically have taken out too many teeth. Okay. And like one more tooth is just another pain in the rear. The grump is this older, usually man who's just tired. Surgery has taken a beating on their body. They're just sick of dealing with people, all the whining complaints. You know, they know a lot. They've been through it all. But the goal of the grump is just to get through the day and get the hell away from people and have a beer or Coke Zero at the end of the day. I don't know what your thing is, but they're just tired. And, you know, underlying the situation is the grump should have retired like a couple of years ago. But the truth is his wife divorced him. And so she took the money. Now he's got to keep working and he's pissed about it. It's just like the grump, you know, these older surgeons who, they're so great because they have this wealth of knowledge, but it's like, for me, I'm always trying to extract info. It's like trying to pull teeth, you know, pun intended, to get these guys to be nice and share their knowledge. But God bless them, these guys who are just hanging in there. Any experiences with the grumpy man?
And you're right. It can be anybody, but we tend to think from a stereotype as the old man grump, right? And you're right. I think your stereotype is so perfect, you know, and more recently, it's like the grump surgeon is the one that was going to retire, but then COVID hit and now they can't quite retire. And you said, you know, at the end of the day, they want to go get a beer. Well, they used to get a beer, but now they're doing the Coke Zero, like you said, because they're trying to lose a little weight as well. There's so many things that are not the way that they should be anymore. And looking at the other stereotypes, the grump doesn't like the bro or the God complex because the bro is too chill with all these things. The bro does not really see it seriously to the grump. And at the same time, the God complex surgeon is probably younger. He or she thinks that he or she is more experienced, but the grump's been doing this for 40 years. And the grump really knows what it's all about. And both the bro and the God complex just don't get it. They do not have the experience that the grump has. And if COVID had not hit, the grump would be retired.
100% agree. Oh, that is great nuance. Okay, so I feel like probably 85, 90% of surgeons can be in one of these categories. However, there's another category that is cannot be left unmentioned. There's many, many categories, I'll say that, you know. But there's one that I just love, and I call he or she the canceller, aka Anxious Abe or Anxious Agnes. These surgeons are terrified of all the possible things that could go wrong. They might hear someone down the hall say that they took a baby aspirin, and they'll immediately run to where they heard that and cancel the case because so-and-so, you know, sniffed a baby aspirin. They want medical clearance for almost any medical problem that arises. Certainly, if the patient is sneezing or mentions at all that they have a family history of diabetes, they're getting a medical clearance in their mind. In the counselor's mind, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, and you need to be prepared for every possible horrible thing that's about to happen. I'm sure all of us can identify with some of this, it being inside of us, but one thing that is very difficult, and those who have been residents that have had an attending who's a counselor may relate here with me, but these surgeons are helicopters. They're always helicoptering over their assistants if they have residents they're in charge of, and they're always like looking for issues, and they're always trying to induce anxiety in the people that are under them, because they feel like if they, like we were talking about before with stress, if they can induce anxiety in everyone, that will make everyone, you know, be more careful and be more intense about work. Unfortunately, the opposite happens. And when you're putting all this pressure on people, usually they perform worse. That's a whole side note. But the goal of the counselor is just to pretty much cancel things and get rid of bad situations. You know how we have this motto in surgery, a chance to cut is a chance to cure. For them, their motto is a chance to cancel is a chance to cure. So what are your thoughts about the counselor?
Oh, yes. And I feel like we've all fallen into the counselor. And when I have seen myself falling more into the stereotype of the counselor is when something has recently gone badly, right?
Yes, yes.
And so I just extracted an impacted tooth and had significant postoperative bleeding or something like that. So the next week, someone comes in and they've sniffed that baby aspirin. And because it's so fresh in my mind, yeah, you know what? Did you sniff it yesterday or the day before? It was yesterday. Okay. So if it was yesterday, that is not enough time. And we're going to need you to reschedule at least 3 months into the future. And like you said, a lot of this comes from what you've experienced too. And if you have attendings that tend to be counselors, and then you have other attendings that tend to be a more cavalier type, and you've seen certain types of things happen to one versus the other, okay, maybe I need to be a little bit more careful. Oh gosh, I have seen and fallen into the counselor based upon my own recollection bias at many different times.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because I think oftentimes we see that in residency, the two contrasting personalities. But the contrast of the counselor is who I call the cowboy, you know, who's like they'll do anything, anywhere, nothing is too difficult. Okay, what's that? Patient took warfarin, Eliquis, and aspirin. No problem, man. We got this. It's just like, you know, no issue is, and they almost get a thrill out of doing crazy stuff, you know, being on the edge of like, potentially this could go wrong. Isn't this exciting? It's like, so it's the total opposite of the counselor. Gotta love the cowboy as well. There's the veteran who's just like, you know, the war-hardened guy who's probably somewhere in between the transition from God complex to the grump. And they're like, I love this person. I kind of see you as the veteran. Aaron Liddell, some of these guys I've had on the podcast. I mean, they've had so many difficult situations. They've seen it all. They're not phased. They're not too anxious, but they're not too cowboyish. They're kind of right in that perfect mix there. And I just love surrounding myself and talking to surgeons like this. Any comments about the veteran? Oh,
I agree. When you started saying the veteran, I thought exactly what you said. It is this person between the God complex and the grump, right? The veteran is like this sweet spot, and some people never reach it, and some people reach it and stay there, and some people reach it and then fall out of it. And I feel like we all aspire to be the veteran, but we know probably that at times, even if we've achieved it, we're going to fall into these other stereotypes too.
Yep, totally. The last one I'll just mention is who I call the almost viral surgeon. They're that surgeon who has a dazzlingly white smile, you know, spray tan, overly paralyzed facial muscles from all the Botox. They just look, you know, like $1 million. They're dressed to the nines. Their clinic is more like a studio. It's decked out with the latest lighting and recording tech, and every opportunity for them is content creation. And for them, it would be a chance to create content is a chance to cure, you know? And so that's their view. They're always promoting everything on Facebook. Even when they go to the restroom, they're doing a live Facebook feed. They assume the whole world loves them and wants to see everything they do. So this is a funny one too. I love these guys.
And the almost viral surgeon, if you want to take the stereotype a little further, probably they live in LA or Miami, right? And they're creating this content. And in fact, they moved to those locations to create this content. And it is just the center of everything. And it's funny because it falls in line exactly with what general societal changes have been recently, right? It's like, we want more content. We want to show exactly what we can do. And the almost viral has been so pervasive in all aspects of, I feel like, the job market nowadays, including oral and maxillofacial surgery.
Yeah, this is exactly right. Okay, well, those are some of the main stereotypes I have for the surgeons. A lot of funny stuff. I think we need to be able to laugh at ourselves. We need to be able to see the funny stuff that's going on and evaluate things like this. It's just hilarious, the different things. And nobody senses this and probably appreciates these stereotypes more than a resident, right? Because like the resident is dealing with all these stereotypes in their attendings and is constantly trying to change how they're talking and doing according to whatever stereotype they have to deal with that day, right? So if they're dealing with the counselor, they have to be on, walking on eggshells that day. They have to be careful. If they're dealing with, the God complex, they got to be praising that attending. It's just so funny. The residents, I get a kick out of residents. Well, there's so many funny observations too I've made of surgeons, and I don't think we have time to go through all of this, but one is every now and then I'll hang out with surgeons and see them working, and I get a kick out of, or I hear assistants talking about surgeons. I get a kick out of surgeons who like flip out and get really angry at the tooth when they're trying to extract and it won't come out. And they're just like, start swearing up a storm, son of a bee, this freaking tooth. And they're, hitting the tooth. I don't know what they're doing, but like I hear all these stories from my assistants about surgeons just losing their mind because this root won't come out or something won't happen, and they're all manner of bad behavior. Any comments? Have you seen stuff like this, or maybe you yourself?
Oh yeah. And you have to blame everything except for yourself for the situation not going well, right? So the anatomy, maybe the patient showed up late and that's probably the reason you're having problems with this tooth. Or maybe it was that baby aspirin that was sniffed a couple of days ago. And even though there's no bleeding, the field is surgically, completely hemostatic. It was probably the aspirin that had something to do with not being able to get that root tip out. It couldn't have been me because I had my protein bar and my coffee this morning, and I've done this a million times and I'm good to go. So I don't know what the patient or the assistants did, but it is their problem that this tooth will not come out.
Oh man, you just reminded me of another stereotype, the blamer. They're always blaming everyone for making excuses, guys.
So I have no experience with that from what you just heard me say. None at all.
I can tell. This is all observation. You've only read this in magazines. Yes. Okay. That's so funny, dude. All the stupid things surgeons do. I get a kick out of seeing what surgeons wear too, and the things they wear to work. I've gone through an evolution of things I wear, like, scrubs. In residency, we're all wearing baggy scrubs. That's a whole nother stereotype too. The resident, the resident is usually wearing really baggy, wrinkled scrubs or creases in them from the machine. They have this haggard look to them. They have bloodshot eyes. They're kind of tapping their foot, trying to stay awake. Same. Just God bless the resident. Usually they have a big ID badge, maybe two or three, with carabiners hanging off them and chains and all sorts of. It's just so cringy for me to look at the resident when they got these scuffed up dance goes or like Birkenstocks. And oh my gosh, their hair is kind of ruffled and just poor resident. I feel so bad. They were probably up to 3 a.m. and they had to wake up at 4 to attend a lecture. I don't know.
The lower third of the scrubs have coffee stains on them too. Don't forget that one. And it's questionable if that coffee got on there in the morning or if it's been on there for 2 or 3 days, depending upon their call schedule.
Oh my gosh, I just have to throw the resident a bone. But anyways, I was going back to what people wear. You get out of residency, then usually you're wearing nicer scrubs. I've gone through a phase where I love, dressing nicely. And I went through a phase where I wore a shirt and tie, and I did that, just put like a gown on top of that for surgery and just all sorts of clothing you see. And then you get the grump usually is wearing like a Hawaiian shirt with like sandals. And what is going on here? Like Jimmy Fallon does this like dad clothes, but they'll go to New York and just like see what dads are wearing. And it's just hysterical. Like white socks with open-toed sandals. And you're like, who does that? It's so cringy. Oh my gosh. But I love too how patients are always assessing the surgeon and like looking at how the surgeon dresses. And they're looking for flaws, right? Like they're trying to see what is wrong? Like, for example, a couple weeks ago, one of my patients was like, hey, you know, you have some blood spots on your glasses, right? Like, do you see that? And I was like, oh, yeah, thanks. I just wipe it off of my shirt. And they kind of have this cringe look on their face. And they're like, if this guy's glasses are dirty, you know, and he can't see what he's doing, and then he's wiping blood off on his shirt, I don't know about this guy. You know, there's just a lot of question marks. You know, be careful with how you dress, how you present yourself. Moving to stereotypes of the, let's talk about the front desk first. And these people make me crack up. And there's stereotypes for assistants as well. But the front desk, just the other day, they just make me laugh so hard. Because I think a lot of us are lucky enough to have front desk who are like dual trained, right? And they know the back and they've been assistants. But a lot of front desk people do not, and they have no experience, which is the case where I'm usually working. And so what gets me, I just love like overhearing patients asking people up front clinical questions. And it's just such a humorous exchange. For example, the other day, like someone came to the front, hey, I see this on my, you know, plan for the day is this platelet therapy. Like, what is that? And the girl who's just, you know, bless her heart, started working in oral surgery like a month ago, never assisted anything. She's just like trying to fumble around, basically BSing the situation. And I call this person the BSer. They're like, well, you know, this is a really important treatment. And, you know, Dr. Stuka would never do anything that's not totally necessary. And it's super helpful and very important. And using all these words, they're trying to like, but they really don't know what it is, but they're trying to get the patient positive. And it's just so hilarious. So the front desk person has no idea what the clinical thing is, but they're making stuff up. Have you ever experienced this or overheard it?
Oh, yeah. And I think a lot of this depends upon, too, long term, at least the people that fall into this category. It's based upon like what information or what help the surgeon has provided or not provided to the front desk. Because like, let's say every time the front desk tries to say like, hey, Dr. Stuka, can you tell me a little bit about this, you know, and everything? You're like, listen, I don't have time. I've got to go do this. Well, then they kind of feel like they got to BS it a little bit because you haven't helped them. And so it's like, so they're going to say, well, this is great. And here's what it is. Sort of as a side joke, when I was in residency, and I tell this to residents now jokingly, someone asks you a question in residency, let's say, and you don't know the answer, I always joke that you should just cite non-existent papers because people will have no idea if it's true or not. You know, they can just ask you, hey, what's the technique for this? And you could say, well, you know, according to Smith and Johnson, when they published in, according to Smith and Johnson, when they published this in, you know, 99 in, I forget the journal, but anyway, they said that the important thing was to do this, this, and this. And sometimes we fall into that as well in our staff who feel like they've got to present themselves appropriately, but they don't really have the information, or maybe we haven't given it to them.
Totally agree. The next stereotype I have for the people at the front is the blocker. I have one particular person who I work with who, if they're asked a clinical question up front, you know, they have no clinical background, they'll just literally almost turn a shade of green and be like, stop, wait, do not ask me any questions. I'm not a clinical person. That is for Dr. Stuka. Or sometimes they'll even get up and run to the back and be like, Dr. Stuka, someone just asked a question about the platelets. I don't know what to do. Could you come up here and figure this out? And I'm just like, okay, just take a deep breath. Just let them know that I will address that question once they come. Okay, good. We're good. Okay, I'm going to go back up to the front because people are asking questions. To see if they are asking questions, I'm not going to say anything bogus. And they're so worried about saying the wrong clinical thing that they're like overly anxious about people asking questions. So that makes me laugh and smile.
And you know, the blocker is either the blocker by nature, or the blocker was the BSer, and then you called them out on it as the doctor, and now they have turned into the ultimate blocker, right? Because they told them about the PRP before, and you said, hey, you can't say those things because you don't really know what's going on, and they have taken that to the extreme. And now if someone says the word platelet, and they go, whoa, 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 hold on, I got to get Dr. Stuka. And sometimes it's even a little bit with retribution, like, well, hey, he told me I couldn't talk about it. So now every time someone says the word platelet, I'm going to go get him and he can come up here and tell him exactly himself what's going on. It's amazing how those stereotypes can switch based upon the way we treat staff too as providers.
So true. Oh my gosh. Another one I've identified is the storyteller. This is a front desk staff member, team member, who's had an experience with you as the surgeon, or maybe their child. And that's how they answer every question. So like the patient up front who's checking in, hey, Do you know what this platelet therapy is? And here's how they answer. Oh, yes, this is an incredible treatment. I had a tooth extracted like 3 years ago, and Dr. Stuckey was phenomenal. Like, no pain, no issues. It was like under 1 minute. Everything went great. You're going to have a great time. And it's just going to, your experience is going to be exactly like mine, probably even better. You know, they could ask any question and they'll just funnel it back to their one experience they had with you and how you'd have no flaws and you're the best. And this makes me smile as well because it's hilarious, but it also makes me cringe because I'm always like, don't tell patients that it takes 1 minute, you know, that there's no pain because there will be pain and stuff like that. So any thoughts on this one?
Yes. And there's the opposite. There's the counterpart to the storyteller too, which is, you know, someone just saw someone in the waiting room who has this draining wound coming out of their neck or something. And then they come up to the front desk. They have the same treatment plan. Oh, you know, so-and-so just had that. They were actually in the waiting room here just a second ago. And they had that done a few weeks ago and everything. And the patient is thinking, what, that's what I'm, you know, and just like, oh, this story's, let's just talk about objectively what we're going to do here and not try to compare it to the good and the bad that's happened in the past.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. So funny. With assistants, you know, assistants are right hand and left hand. They're with us at all times. They're so helpful. Love them. But there are some stereotypes and we have many different types of assistants. One stereotype I have that is sometimes difficult for me is, and I haven't really labeled these very well, but this is who I call the old hand, or the, I guess you could call the veteran as well, but this is an assistant who has worked for some other doctor for 20 years plus. They spent most of their assistant career with that doctor, and now for some reason, you know, they're not in that job and they're assisting you. And maybe they've been there, you know, a week, month, a year. But this person, anytime anything happens, they're always stating what their old doctor, let's call him Dr. Jones, would be doing in this situation. And how Dr. Jones, you know, they would say, oh, well, Dr. Jones would have handled the situation like this. Or, you know, Dr. Jones cuts the tooth like that. Or, you know, Dr. Jones does a biopsy this way. And it's like nails on a chalkboard for the surgeon, you know, who has to hear about this other surgeon. Like, I think I do like hearing about how other surgeons do stuff because you want to learn. Oh, that's interesting. But like after the millionth time, you're just like, okay, I don't care what Dr. Jones did. I don't give a crap, you know, about how Dr. Heckler does things. You know, I'm the new sheriff and this is how we're doing stuff, you know, and you can get riled up with these assistants.
Yes, yes. And sometimes it starts with like what appears to be like a benign comment, but it's really not. Like you'll be doing something and someone will say, well, that's interesting. And you go, what do you mean? Oh, I just haven't seen it done like that before. You know, Dr. Jones wouldn't have done that. And you're like, what are you? Okay. The other time this happens all the time is when a child then joins a father or mother in practice, right? Because the father or mother has been doing this in the practice for 30 years, and then the child comes in, the child is a completely different generation of training, and they'll say, well, you know, Dr. So-and-so, your dad, he doesn't do it that way. And you're like, are you aware my dad graduated in 1984? I get it. We don't do the same thing. Okay. You know, like you said, I'm the sheriff too. This is how we're going to do things. And, you know, luckily, in those cases, there's usually good communication between the father or mother and the child who are practicing together. And so they can kind of work out those things. But oh, man, that happens in that scenario, too, all the time, because it can be a big change for the assistants.
Yes, totally. There's another stereotype I call the assistant stereotype is the doctor, or basically, like, let's say a patient sits down in the chair, and you know how patients are always asking assistants questions before the doctor comes in, right? Like, if you ever overhear, it's always like, hey, yeah, I'm getting this tooth extracted. What do you think? You know, let me hear what you think about this. Every now and then, assistants will, like, succumb to these patient questions, and they'll be like, yeah, you know, let's look at this. Okay, yeah, and the x-ray does look pretty bad, you know, And but then they'll start straying off topic. And actually, the one behind it, that looks bad too. I think you should have them both extracted. Or did you see that blob in your sinus? That does not look good. I probably there's like something, a cancer growing in there. You know, they'll start saying things and you're like, oh my gosh. And then you'll walk in the room and you'll be like, okay, we're here to extract 30. And they'll be like, oh yeah. And aren't you going to take 31 and take the sinus thing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, your assistant just showed me everything on the x-ray. And you're just like, forehead slap emoji. What is going on?
Yes. And this one can roll into the storyteller too, because even though the storyteller was for the front desk staff, you know, like you said, you come in and you think the plan is this, and then they notice that antral pseudocyst on the radiograph. And then there's some story like, you know, normally this isn't like a something bad, but I had a friend and they had this on the panoramic and it turned out to be something really bad. And so, you know, and then now you're dealing with this whole other scenario, this whole other narrative. And you're like, I thought I had 15 minutes to take care of this. And now we've got this whole other issue that we've got to address and try to make sure everyone understands what's going on. That is so true. And it can be very helpful at times, right? Because the assistants, particularly the ones that have been there for a long time, really do have some great information to give to patients. But sometimes the stereotype is it goes a little bit too far and it makes our job more difficult than we want it to be.
Yep, exactly. There's another stereotype I call the absent-minded professor. These are assistants who mean well, but they're kind of forgetful. For example, for my local anesthesia patients, I like them to do topical. You know, I know that's controversial and many surgeons just think topical is like sprinkling holy water. So why would you do it? You know, that they throw it all away. We don't need it. I think there's a psychology that can happen there and there is some clinical benefit. So I do it. But I'll have assistants sometimes who will go in, hey, you know, here's the thing. They'll do the workup. All right, Dr. Suki will be in a minute. They'll take a big glob of topical and a Q-tip and stick it right in their mouth, have them close their mouth. And then they'll like go into the lab and like start sterilizing things. And they forget to tell me their patient's there, right? And then they'll come, hey, Dr. Stuckey, oh yeah, you got this patient in room 4. Yeah, it's a local for this. And like it turns out like the patient's been there for like over 10, 15, sometimes 20 minutes sitting with this topical swab in their mouth. I'll walk in. Hey, how you doing? And they're like, whoa, 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 all the spits coming down their face, draining on the bib. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. How many times have I told these assistants, if you're going to put the topical in, show them the saliva ejector, hand it to them, show them how it works. They can, you know, suction their own mouth. It just drives me berserk.
Or the topical swab has like migrated, you know? So like it started like between the right buccal mucosa, right, and the maxillary teeth. And then you get in there 10 minutes later and it's like hanging off the lower lip like a cigarette or something. And you're like, I hope this got where it was supposed to be because I don't know what has occurred in the last 15 minutes. And then you're like, okay, do I reapply the topical or do we just assume that I don't know. What are you feeling here? You know, it's just like, oh gosh, it is. It's such a great stereotypical situation.
So great. Oh my gosh. And you know, I have to hand it to assistants because they're like doing 1,000 things at once. And my lead assistant, his name's Juan, but he's like this ninja, right? And he's like does 1,000 things at once. He's like running. I mean, he's got to be so much more tired than me at the end of the day because he's just, He fills all the holes and the gaps, and assistants can be just so incredible and they don't get enough credit. A lot of good, funny stereotypes. One is when you're in residency, there's always that like assistant, right? In residency, or maybe it's a nurse or somebody who's been there like for 20 plus years. And it's similar to what you're saying, but it's like to the nth degree because the resident is like, they see them as like totally, you know, inexperienced, don't know anything. And my brother had this experience in residency where the assistant was like basically telling him, hey, you know, you have to extract the tooth like this. And at one point actually took the forceps from my brother's hand and extracted the tooth for him. That's how crazy it can get, you know, but like when you were saying, they'll make comments like, interesting, I've never seen that before. And all these underhanded like jabs that they're trying to take at you.
Oh, yes. Sometimes in between those extremes, I remember, you know, when I was a chief resident and you're overseeing a clinic and there's interns or other residents in there, the assistant will just come find you directly. We'll just like stop the procedure and be like, hey, you need to come in here and you need to show this person, you know, exactly, because they don't want to tell them. They don't want to take it to that extreme. But they know that if someone else comes in there, they with some authority will say, oh, hey, why don't you look at it this way? You know, why don't you do that? Some of those assistants that maybe won't take it to the extreme of saying, let me show you how this should be done here.
Exactly. Oh, my residency is so great. And there's so much good comedy there. please, if your listeners are in residency, jot stuff down and email it to me. It just makes me smile to hear funny stuff going on in your lives. Okay, moving on to our last group of people. These are the patients, and there's so many funny things that patients do. It's just hilarious. I think most of the comedy that comes from patients stems from basically, you know, underlying nerves and like fear and being afraid of the unknown, what's going to happen. We've all been a patient. We've all had this anxiety and this fear. But, you know, there's some stereotypes I found of patients. And I think, you know, I'm not trying to belittle or, you know, kind of look down on patients at all. I think actually it's healthy to look at these stereotypes to figure out why they're like this. But here's my first one. Patient stereotype is who I call the nervous Nelly. And they are just almost like a bird, right? You know how birds like land on the ground or on a tree and they're like looking everywhere, their heads cocking everywhere, looking. Their eyes are big and they're always on alert for some predator. That's how these patients are. Like they'll sit down, they're looking at the tray. Their eyes are huge. They see the instruments on the tray. They see, you know, the suction is kind of going on. The floor looks a little dirty. Everything's bothering them. They're just anyone who walking down the hall, they're looking at the hall. They're kind of subtly jerking and they're super on edge. And so this is a patient who clearly has lots of nerves, but they're very worried. And I'm constantly trying to calm down. I feel like that's usually my mood is just calmness and tranquility. And so I try to bring that peace to them. But I think surgeons who themselves maybe who are like the counselor who are also nervous, they can kind of be almost like dynamite when they get with these patients because it's two stressed out people that sometimes can't have good synergy. Any comments on this type of patient?
That's exactly what I was going to say, Grant, about the counselor. This is the patient where the counselor surgeon takes this to be the equivalent of sniffing a baby aspirin. Maybe this isn't the right time. Maybe we should have done some oral sedation. You know, maybe we should cancel the case and just you come back in and we'll do IV sedation or we'll do something like this. And it's a very tricky situation because most patients do have this sense, even if they don't exude it to this extent, right? And so our goal is to try to pick up on those things because otherwise this can be a very difficult situation for both the patient, the surgeon, and the staff as well.
And I mean, as the surgeon, I think with these nervous Nelly patients, it's kind of like part of us sometimes wants to be like almost irritated and be like, dude, just calm down. Like, there's not, everything's going to be fine, you know? But then another part of you kind of wants to answer their questions and hold their hand and, you know, walk them through the situation. I think that's the right thing is just to being patient with them and bringing that peace to them and not like getting all riled up because they're so anxious, you know, and we all know that this can kind of get on the nerves of a surgeon, but be patient. The next stereotype I have is called the big chill, who I call is the chill or the big chill patient who is super chill. They come. These are great, you know, easy patients to treat usually. I'll tell you, in Colorado, most of them smell like MJ. They've been smoking. They're just like, whatever, man. Like, let's do this, bro. Let's get this done. And they're super relaxed. Some don't smoke, you know, and some are just naturally chill. And then others are very anxious, but they're trying to be chill. Sometimes they're even meditating in the chair. Props to these people who are trying to calm themselves down. I had someone like literally in the full like crisscross applesauce with the hands up doing a meditation in my chair the other day, and hard for me not to laugh, but you got to do what you got to do. But the big chill, have you experienced anyone who's like this?
Yes, I have as well. You may have more of them in Colorado, as you described, than, you know, we experienced in North Carolina. The big chill is really legit big chill. Then, hey, the bro comes right in and they just get along so well. I mean, you know, this is just the day. And this is going great, and we're all going to be doing well. Now, obviously, if things go well, that works out. But sometimes, you know, as you were describing, the big chill can sometimes also be masking the nervous Nelly as well. And so you always have to be aware that just because someone looks like they've got everything under control, be it a surgeon, an assistant, or a patient, there may be that little thing ready to show up if one thing goes the wrong way. And so we've all got to be aware of that as well.
This brings us into the loud laugher. There's these patients who just laugh at everything and every little thing is so funny. You know, they'll come in and they'll see the needle on the tray. Needles. Oh my gosh. I love needles. Needles are hilarious. And they're laughing it up. And oh my goodness. You know, look at the blade, or you're taking the tooth out and you hear a crack, like when, you know, a root cracks your crown. Oh, that was hilarious. Did you hear that crack? That was so loud. It felt like my whole face was cracking in half, you know, and they're just, it's just hilarious. It's hard not to laugh as a surgeon, but some of these people, most of them, I feel like there's that fear. And so they're trying to mask it with just making everything comedic around them. Pretty funny. Have you experienced this?
Oh, yeah. And again, that's part of the healthy type of response to stress and nervousness sometimes is, you know, trying to find humor in things. And maybe they're masking the nervous Nelly. Maybe they really do just find everything entertaining. And I really enjoy, you know, that type of situation if everything continues to go well. But at the same time, like we said, sometimes this is a indication that, hey, this person's really nervous. And let's make sure that even though things appear to be going well, let's keep them going well.
Yes, exactly. So gotta love these comedic people and trying to find humor in the stress. The next one I have is, I call the cell phone junkie. This is the patient who is just always on their phone, right? They're looking at Facebook, looking at Instagram, looking at playing a game. I mean, so many, I'm surprised these days, even I have like 60-year-olds just like are cell phone junkies. They're on their phone playing Bejeweled or whatever game it is. But oftentimes it's the younger teenager people. And sometimes it's so bad that like you're actually about to take the tooth out and you're like trying to get past them and they can't put the phone down. And you have to say, excuse me, can you put your phone down? Like this is, and I think a lot of these people, maybe there's a true addiction there with the phone, which is a whole other issue. But a lot of them are very nervous and they're trying to distract the mind, distract with the phone. And it can get in our way. It can be annoying as a surgeon, you know, we can be tempted to kind of just be like, dude, what's your problem? And maybe even lash out and get upset about the phone. But I think more and more we're seeing people turn to the phone for solace, you know, in a time of fear and nervousness. Have you seen anything like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you probably had it too, you know, even the attempts to engage with the cell phone, as I think you were alluding to, like mid-procedure. And you're like, I wish I had just had a policy where all these things need to be set on the side or something, right? Because like, it's like at the most critical time of the procedure, right? And then all of a sudden something goes off on the phone and you're like, I know that's not my phone. What's going on here? And then the next thing you know, there's movement and this screen that's up in front of you and everybody. And you're like, oh no, this is the one time I needed things to be exactly stable and still. And what's going on here? You know, it's like, again, sometimes it's a true addiction thing. Sometimes it's a nervous thing. It is funny. And the whole other spin from the cell phone junkie would be the one that has used the cell phone, you know, to like research absolutely everything that is about to happen. And it's as we all say in the medical and dental community, Dr. Google, right? And sometimes it's like very legitimate questions that are like, hey, I tried to research this beforehand. And like, I had this one question, particularly if you didn't talk about it in your informed consent. But sometimes it's like using the phone and the knowledge to like try to prove that you're wrong. And that's always a little difficult too, when they're like, well, what about this? And you're like, no, yeah, but in this case, you know, that doesn't really apply because of this. Oh, really? Because, you know, I read also here, and you're like, okay, well, maybe we need to take a step back and try to talk this out a little bit more before we figure out if this is the appropriate thing in the appropriate time.
Yes. And I'll get patients who sit literally come in the room. They don't even hide it anymore. They'll sit down and be like, so I was watching YouTube and here's what I saw. And you're just like, oh my gosh, why are you doing that? They're like, I'm thoroughly freaked out. I was seeing YouTube, you know, extractions or whatever it is. And I watched like 4 hours of it and now I'm just freaked out of my mind. And I'm like, what? People do this to themselves. It's like,
yeah. It's like, I took off work the day before the procedure so I could specifically watch YouTube videos all day to make sure that I knew exactly what to expect. And now that I've watched 17 hours, I'm a little tired, number one. But number two, I have all these questions, right?
Funny, man. It's important to find the humor in this stuff. Patient stereotype I have is who I call the raging bull. This is the patient who manifests fear through anger, you know, and they're pissed. They're pissed about everything. They're pissed about waiting too long. And I'll say usually in my experience, this patient is like the 50-year-old male, somewhere in that realm, 40-year-old. They're just so upset about everything. They're waited too long. They're upset about the bill. It costs too much. They're upset about the assistant who came in and asked them, so why are you here today? You know, well, don't you know why I'm here today? What kind of place is this? You know, well, no, I just need to hear it in your own words, sir. And you know, like any questions that are asked, and well, don't you know the answer to that? You know, they're just like so angry. And I feel like, you know, my assistants will come and tell me, hey, Dr. Suki, we got this guy in room two who's just like, he's just furious. And he's got me to my wit's end. And everyone is, the front desk was mad about him. He's just pissing everyone off. I almost smile when I hear that, because I'll always just go in the room and walk in there with this big old smile. How are you doing today? You know, and usually they just like melt and they're like, guard goes down. But sometimes they started taking jabs at me and they're like, yeah, I'm just pissed, you're charging so much, you're gonna put me in pain, aren't you, and all this stuff. And I'm like, nah, you'll be fine. And I'm just keep hitting them with all this niceness and smiling, and they just get tired of it.
I think that's the way to do it, Grant. It's almost nice when you kind of know that you have some like inside information from the staff before you even make contact, because then you can go in and try to like just, you know, kill them with kindness, if you will, and really try to diffuse the situation, which works a lot of times. And I was going to say, I have seen so much of that with the electronic medical record, where the idea that like, you know, it should already all be in there and we don't have to have this discussion again because it's like already in the record, particularly if you're in a medical institution that like it integrates everything. And, you know, to some extent, that's true, right? Like we should have seen that stuff if we have access to it. But at the same time, like it's our due diligence to make sure that like what is in there that someone else, not us, put in there is actually accurate. But oh my gosh, that one occurs so commonly. Like, oh yeah, it's all in there. You're like, no, I know it's in there, but I want to make sure, because at the end of the day, this is me and you. And well, yeah, I don't even remember, but it's all in there. So if you just read it, it'll be in there. And that's always a difficult one. But killing them with kindness and the initial interaction, it tends to work out. It really does. I agree with you.
Love it. Love patience. Love all the funny things they do. I think it is important for us to be able to find comedy and be able to laugh with our patients. That helps ease the tension, you know, not laughing at them and like mocking a patient, but being able to laugh with them, find the funny things that are going on. Even if you're in a situation with a raging bull or a nervous Nelly and it's like a high tense situation, sometimes even just, you know, after the fact, or, you know, taking a break and kind of laughing by yourself or with an assistant about just the comedy of the situation and not taking it so seriously and letting it get your own blood pressure boiling, you know, that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I agree, Grant. There, I think all of us probably have certain lines that we use to diffuse situations. And, you know, just one of them that you made me think of, you were talking about needles earlier, is a lot of people are needle phobic, right? And I feel like very commonly when you're even getting ready to place an IV or something, I know staff do that a lot, but if you're there, you know, they say, oh, I don't like needles. You know, you're like, okay, great, here we go. We haven't even started. You know, one of the things that I've always used is I will just turn to them and very seriously say, you know, Mr. So-and-so, if you actually liked needles, I would be very concerned. Something like that kind of helps sometimes to diffuse the situation. You both get a chuckle out of it. Okay, you know, yeah, that's right. Okay, this is going to be fine. I think having some of those things that you know that are a little bit funny that can help diffuse and calm the situation can be so helpful.
Well, good. Hopefully these stereotypes and some of these funny observations can bring a smile to your face, can help you find humor in your own practices. Who knows, maybe we'll do another comedy podcast, because I'm trying to find a stage for my burgeoning stand-up comedy career. I want to be the first stand-up oral surgeon comedy act that's just all about oral surgery, and I'm an oral surgeon. I don't think that exists, and I think I need to find that niche. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll open and I'll purposefully be really bad so that then when you come on, you just like save the entire show.
Thank you. Our audience will be maybe 40, 50 people. They're all surgeons or periodontists. But we're going to be taking a lot of jabs at periodontists. So maybe
I was going to say the periodontist will walk out like probably 5 minutes in, and that's okay. That will be part of the skit, is we will want to make the periodontist walk out of the show. That's the plan.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, take all messages. You know what? There's so much funny stuff to laugh at in our profession. You know, it's a serious profession. There's serious complications, serious things going on, but there's also funny comedy to be had, and it's important to find that in the appropriate moments. So Ben, thank you for doing this with me. I appreciate you. Don't you feel better? We had some laughs today. You just kind of feel better now.
Absolutely. And like I said at the beginning, you talk to any psychiatrist and psychologist, and using humor and finding humor in everyday things, it can be such a positive thing for you, your staff, patients, everybody, as long as you kind of do it appropriately and you know what the underlying reasons are for it.
Totally agree. All right, my man. Well, let's keep in touch.
Sounds good, Grant. Have a good one.
You too. Talk to you later. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. For more information on these podcasts, please visit everydayoralsurgery.com. I love feedback and would be very grateful if you would reach out to me via my email, grantstuckey@gmail.com, and let me know what you thought of this episode. Or you can text me at 720-441-6059. Additionally, if you have any topics you'd like to hear about, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, please, please email or text me. I found many of my interviewees through people who have been contacting me and have been listening, and I've gotten so many great ideas for more podcasts, and that's what helps keep the podcast rolling. So really appreciate you making that extra effort and helping me out with feedback and knowing what to do next on the podcast. Thank you so much.